southeast coast. Spanish moss hanging from the crooked live oaks, reaching far above him like a cradle in the sky, woven together by some invisible god. Every inhale is a little birth, every exhale he dies. He's a man on two wheels looking for some peace and quiet in this fitful world. As he rode into Charleston past the harbor and sound, antebellum houses waving flags from the old south, he watched all the people go strolling by, shopping bags in hands, coffee cups of desire. And he wondered if they knew the waters on the rise, all the dukes and the duchesses and the peasants of King Street under the waterline. Oh, when will enough be enough? Ooh, when will we be satisfied? When will enough be enough? When will we be satisfied?
It is time for Talkin' Music on KVNF, your Mountain Grown Community Radio. I'm your host, Taya J. I'm joined today live in the studio by cellist, singer, songwriter, and composer Ben Solee, here to talk about the release of his new album, Long Haul, and his reemergence back into the touring music scene after a 7-year creative hiatus. We hope that you enjoy. You grew up in a very musical family. I'm curious for you, how did you go about finding your own unique sound within the musical landscape of your family?
So yeah, I grew up in a home that was full of music. My mom sang. Daddy was an R&B guitar player. And the music that was on in the house was like Phoebe Snow, Wilson Pickett, Ray Charles, that sort of world. And I just kind of grew up around it, and then also picked up the cello in public school. So I started studying classical music, which provided a nice contrast. And then I would spend weekends sometimes with my grandparents. My grandfather was a fiddler, and he would teach me old fiddle tunes. His name was Elvis Henry Cornelius, which is a cool name. And somewhere in the stew of all those influences, the R&B and folk and the bluegrass and the classical music, I emerged, I guess. I've never really been too intentional about my sound or my approach. So in that way, it's a process of ongoing discovery.
I think the cello is such an interesting instrument because it's very, you're interacting. It's very interactive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's full body. The sound is really incredible. The shape of it. Talk about the cello a little bit. Talk about what you love about the cello.
The cello I think of as sort of like the Swiss Army knife of the orchestra. It does a little bit of everything. It can do all these like deep, rich, low bass tones. It can do percussive elements. It can do very high melodies. It can do atmospheric stuff. So in that way, as a songwriter, it's kind of, if you're going to grab one instrument, it's a fantastic instrument to have. It's a very intimate instrument. You know, it lays against your body. It asks you, it doesn't require you to like really pay attention to the friction of the bow against the strings and the position of your fingers on this on the fingerboard, because there's no frets, right? It's fretless. So even the placement of a centimeter or less of your finger can change the sound dramatically from sort of a muted, fleshy finger sound to more of a bone, you know, articulate sound. All of those things come together. It is a instrument that can, if you let it, require a lot of presence. Yeah,
I love that description. I love the idea of it as the Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
I think that's lovely.
Yeah.
Then I want to talk about place a little bit. You're from Kentucky, born and raised. You've chosen to stay there and really make your home there, to raise your family there, and to also make your musical career there. And I'm curious how place informs your creativity in particular.
Yeah. Being born and raised in Kentucky is to be born in the middle. And sort of like, I guess, from a ecological perspective, like a boundary zone, right? Like we're at the edge of the South and the edge of the North. And culturally, we're sort of a meeting ground for the Midwest / like Appalachia coming together. And that has resulted in a lot of wonderful music, iconic music, like bluegrass music, right? Which as traditional as it has become, is really kind of an innovation of immigrant music. It's all coming together from, you know, Irish, Scottish, African traditions, gospel, rock and roll, all this stuff is kind of mingling together, and it has come to be known as bluegrass music. But in practice, as it continues to evolve, it's incorporating more and more immigrant music. So I think of Kentucky as a very dynamic place, a very mysterious place. You know, the geology and the natural landscape is, there's lots of hidden places that can protect and nurture new and different ideas that are sometimes unique, sometimes wacky. You know, whether those are recipes or dance styles, or that's, you know, different types of music and styles, storytelling, accents, vernacular, all this stuff kind of comes together. And then there's just this energy that comes from the groundwater in Kentucky. You know, it's emerging and disappearing all these places through these cavernous unknowns in our limestone ground. It's really, I find it to be a very mystical place, a very mercurial place, and a place that's always surprising. And from a practical matter, as a touring musician, it's also a very convenient place to be. You know, I can be to Chicago in 5 hours, or I can be to Nashville in 3 hours, Atlanta in six. You know, these are big markets as a touring artist that I can get to easily. Just hop in my Honda Element and go.
Well, your affection for place is palpable. Do you ever feel limited by having chosen to stay in Kentucky as a musician? Like, had you taken your musical career somewhere else, it might have been different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I was getting ready to graduate from college, I had one professor who, you know, was probably the most successful as an entrepreneur in the world. He's a jazz musician. And he sat me down. He's like, okay, New York or LA? And I was like, neither. And he's like, oh, okay. How about Chicago? Maybe Nashville? And I was like, no, I think I'm going to stay here. And he's like, don't do it. And in reflection, I think he was right. I think it would have been really good for my career to go into those markets and be challenged by the competition in those spaces. And my career was launched at a very unique and kind of tender time. You know, I put out my first record locally in 2007 and then followed that up with a national release of the same record in early 2008 that went really well. It was amazing. And then everything fell through with the, you know, economy, right? We had that, you know, huge, you know, fallout from all of the housing market and everything. And then suddenly people weren't at shows. And then it was a big climb out of that, a climb that eventually led to quite a bit of burnout. And me exploring other modes of touring, like bicycle touring and things to try to make it sustainable for me, not only as a business, but also as a human, right? Like, how can I go and be in these places in a way that feels good? And it seems like it's just continued to be a very disruptive cycle of trying to make it as a musician, you know, from an economic standpoint, from a cultural standpoint. It's also kind of aligned with the same time, like the iPhone came out. So my career has shifted and changed around these new technologies. So, you know, came out in 2007, the iPhone. And so at first people were very connected, and it was really just used to, like, maybe grab a pic and text it to a friend. And now it's become my competition for how I make my art, how I promote my art, like the limited span of attention and the stickiness that with which something must have to be successful in this environment, in this kind of ecological, it's not really, there's economy to it, but it's not ecology. It's people's attention. It's the economy of attention. And I've just never really desired to compete for that. And that has made it, again, challenging. It was always going to be challenging to be a singing cellist. There's just not a lot of examples of success. But for whatever reason, the path of my career has been very disruptive. And the cool part about that is it's left me lots of opportunities to experiment, innovate in some cases. You know, I have done a lot with activism and social engagement with my music, trying to help spread the word about good causes. I've also used technology in interesting ways. I put out the first iOS app for virtual reality, like a music app for virtual reality called The Vanishing Point. And this album, Long Haul, that we just put out is an immersive record, which is to say that it is recorded in a way which is much more like people would hear live music if they were sitting in the room with a musician, right? It's the music surrounds you. And there's not a lot of artists that are putting out records that are recorded for immersive audio. They might remix them for that, but, you know. So what is to say with all that stuff? Being from Kentucky has allowed me to experiment because I'm in between. And it's a sort of middle way that I cherish and has been challenging.
Mm-hmm. And it's that ultimate truth that multiple things can be true at once, right? You can be grateful to live where you live and you can see it for the challenges and you can see it for the way that it has shaped you as a creative and as a maker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting you bring up the 08 crash because I feel like the pandemic has also been a very, as you put it so nicely, tender time for creatives, in particular for musicians very specifically. And I know that this album, your latest album, Long Haul, really came out of a lot of sort of the grief and loss and intensity of that time. Mm-hmm. And yet it's also a very buoyant and, dare I say, hopeful album. And I'm wondering if you'll talk a little bit about those, speaking of multiple things being true at once, if you'll talk about Long Haul a little bit.
Yeah. Well, for those listening, I had Long Haul COVID for about a year and a half. And so that for me manifested as a constellation of symptoms that were really isolating for me outside of the world. I mean, sure, I couldn't smell or taste, but there was also just the cognitive, confusion of not being able to really focus in any meaningful way. There was the anxiety and depression, the fatigue and body pain. I mean, it was just, I just couldn't live like I had lived before. And it was sudden, you know. It's one thing for that to happen gradually over time. It's another thing for it to be sort of a theft, which is what it felt like. But the positive side of that is that COVID was very much a teacher for me. It was a humbling experience, but it was a good teacher. It taught me to have a much more sustainable and loving relationship with my body. And emerging from that, having changed so many things about my relationship with my body, which is, of course, to change your relationship to the world, because this is a very dynamic place that we live in. We're always exchanging our energy in various ways. I found myself wanting to get back out there and write music for the first time in a long time, outside of film scoring. And the result was this record, Long Haul, which swings through the American South, of course, but also swings well through the global South, you know, pulling influences from West Africa, Madagascar especially. There's something about that meeting place that feels very Appalachian to me for some reason, you know, mixing West African music on this island with, you know, Polynesian influences from all these travelers. And yeah, the record deals with a lot of hard stuff. You know, healing takes time. And in that time, a lot of life happens, including the loss of my longtime friend and musical brother, Jordan Ellis, to suicide. You know, saying goodbye to a lot of my big mentors in my life, my father and my chosen father. And I took an approach with this record that writer Adrian Marie Brown calls like an emergent strategy, right? Where I tried to just bring ideas, seeds, into communion with other musicians that I trusted, right? And get into a space and just be like, here's a thought. Let's try to grow this into something that can only happen in this time with these people. Let's find that thing, not whatever one person might want. And doing that iteratively over and over again, the album emerged. And so the wonderful thing about Long Haul as a record is that I can listen to it today on my drive to Aspen, and I will hear something new and surprising. And isn't that life? Isn't that the biggest thing in life, is the moments that surprise you? And so I will use that process going forward, I think. You know, I realize now that music has an incredible power to grow affection for, you know, social, environmental issues. But most importantly, it has the ability to connect someone with themselves, which is the first step to connecting them with the world. And that can help address things like loneliness and lack of belonging, help create a sense of togetherness, which is my mission. I'm trying to create experiences that grow a greater sense of togetherness.
What does togetherness mean to you, Ben?
Togetherness is hard to measure, But for me, it is a sense of ease in place with other people. Yeah. In our like language conversation these days in the world, we often will use language that defines our opposition, right? Like, you know, fighting loneliness, lack of belonging, as opposed to saying I am for, but what is that thing? And the best word I could come up with was togetherness.
Will you lean in strong with your blue ribbons on, trying to carry the weight of the world? There's such a heavy load. And you've been singing your song loud and proud, but you don't believe the words right now. You're just a humming along. Ooh, when you're gonna learn you can't do this alone? Yeah, put your best shoes on, drop a penny in the well, and wish your life away. Call it a test of faith. Then a little Liza Jane comes a-calling your name. You try to resist, but oh, you want to escape all the pride and shame. Oh, when you're gonna learn you ain't got nothing to. When you gonna learn, you already know the truth. Oh, I see people running scared from who they want to be. Figure out what this love is truly for. You got to give it away. And I can tell you right now, there ain't nothing perfect, but you got to find out what you're fighting for. What you're fighting for. Oh, when you're gonna learn, there ain't nothing but the truth. Y'all, who you willing to be? Oh, maybe you believe in fate and destiny. Well, the anger that you feel, although it might seem real, no, there ain't nothing making you feel that way. Feel that way. There ain't nothing making you that way. There ain't no wings in the sky, no devils in the sea, just the music within and the harmony. And if you feel it low, we're gonna lift you high. Don't take it from me. The answer's inside. When you're gonna work it out, when you're gonna work it out, when you're gonna work it out, when you're gonna work it out.
When you gonna work it out? When you gonna work it out? When you gonna work it out? When you gonna work it out?
And when you're gonna learn, you already know the truth. Yes, oh, when you're gonna learn, you already know the truth.
That's When You're Gonna Learn from Ben Solee off his most recent album, Long Haul. Ben joining me today on Talkin' Music. I want to go back for a minute and talk about, this is your first record in 7 years.
Yep.
You took some time off. You grew a family. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that time. Talk to me about taking sort of a break from traveling, a break from releasing albums. Tell me a little bit about that time.
I mean, it was a time of wintering, I think. I had been touring since age 17. So I started touring when I was a senior in high school. Traveling the world with different bands as a sideman, eventually leading to the release of my first solo record, Learning to Bend, and really intense touring. And my son was born very early in that process as well. So being a new father while I was releasing, you know, new records, and being a new husband and all those things. And it was just a big, big push. And I pushed and pushed and pushed until I think I started to burn out a little bit. And then following the election in 2016, I've really felt a need to just go deep in my community, as opposed to the sort of more thin, somewhat superficial work of going around the world and trying to help create change around livability infrastructure and clean water access and music education, arts education, really getting deep in my community. So we started growing our family. We now have 3 children. My son is 16. My 2 daughters are both 7 and 4. And I started doing work with different nonprofit organizations, trying to get in there and help grow togetherness, I guess, especially in the business, like the for-profit business community that has like a social or environmental mission. So in and amongst all that, the Great Pause happened. And that's when I, you know, kind of got sick and was forced to reckon with my relationship with my body and the sort of extractive, exploitative relationship I had with it, especially with my creativity. It's just like, okay, you got to do this thing. Go, 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 go. Which makes sense. That's what I grew up around, especially in Appalachia. I mean, we are inundated with extractive culture there. And I found specifically as a male, I also had a lot of that put on me. There was a sense that I needed to work harder, and that all those other conversations about health, sleep, emotional capacity, mental wellness were to be set aside. And that had real consequences. So all that to say, it was a really important time. Those 7 years between records. It was a busy time. I learned a lot about film scoring. I learned a lot about working in community and community organizing. Learned a lot about, you know, production processes and so on. It was good. It was good. It was a learning time, a time of expansion.
And how has the reemergence been?
Good. Clarity. Much more ease. You know, it's a very challenging time to try to put out a record. You know, the industry is in proper upheaval. You know, how do folks find the music? How do they listen to the music? If they do listen to the music, how do they pay for it? Same with shows. But having a mission, having a clear why is so important. And I don't think I would have gotten there had I not taken that time off. It also provided stability for my family in an incredibly disruptive time, like the Great Pause. I was very lucky to have healthcare and a job for them. And in the way of the universe, these things work out. It was hard. It was really hard. But in the end, I think positive. Yeah.
I want to ask you one more question. You mentioned something last night in your show. You talked about that intersection of being a human being and technology. And yeah. I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, obviously you can't, you're no expert, but from your perspective, what would you say to artists right now who are nervous about this influx of AI, of technology into our world, and what that might do to creativity and what that might do to the individual making process?
Well, my perspective on it is that this technology is to the sort of creative class what quartz technology was to mechanical watches. Right? We had, for 150 years or so, if you wanted to keep time, you had a mechanical watch, pocket watch, then a wrist watch. And there was, you know, a whole industry, a culture, a class of creators and makers who made all the little bits and bobs of those mechanical watches. And then all of a sudden in the late 60s, early 70s, here comes quartz. It's way more accurate than any mechanical watch has ever been. It's exponentially cheaper. It is more robust. It's lighter. It's thinner. Everything's better about it from the standpoint of keeping time. And it decimates the traditional watchmaking industry. You know, all the American watch companies closed their doors for the most part. Swiss watch was, you know, the whole Swiss watchmaking world was absolutely crushed and diminished to a very small few standing. And the watch industry is more alive and vibrant now than it's ever been, you know, and it makes no sense. We don't need watches. We don't need watches to keep time anymore. In fact, they keep poor time compared to our phones. And yet there are people spending a lot of money on fine mechanical watches, okay mechanical watches, you know, enthusiast watches, all these different things. And it's because people told the story of the making of those watches, the experience of wearing a watch and like, you know, what it means. And they really told some good stories. And so I would say to any artist that's worried right now to take a cue from the watch industry, take a cue from the food industry that's been fighting fast food for years, take a cue from the fashion industry that's, you know, really trying to challenge fast fashion, and tell your story, show your fingerprints, make sure they can hear in your recordings and your live shows that it is being made by a human, that it's high touch, that it's challenging. And then also do the thing that the algorithms really struggle to do, which is just follow your gut, your intuition. It's a very powerful tool. And if you trust what resonates with you, and if you actually follow what resonates with you, something original, unique, and surprising will come out. And that is your best shot at being unique, original, and at the end of the day, valuable to a community that's looking and needs art.
Ben Sully, thank you so much for joining us on the KVNF Airwaves.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
A one, two, three.
Well, it could have been the kiss or the long embrace. It may have been the stranger passing by my face. I was gone. Fumbled through the fog, the shivers and the shakes. The crown caper found my youth and stole it away. I was gone. Well, it's a long haul. Yes, it's a long haul. Doctor shook her head, could be anybody's guess, and maybe just a few months or years instead. Why don't you move on? Oh, in that cool Kentucky spring, the bluebells in bloom, could not smell the sweet bluegrass or that honeysuckle perfume. I was gone, stranger to myself. It's a long call. It's a long call. And it takes the time it takes. Yes, I tried all the remedies, burnt citrus and vaccine. I didn't know how rich I was until this poverty. I was gone,
shift from room to room. I nearly gave the last of myself to the darkness and gloom has gone. That's when you called and said, listen to me now. I know you're feeling weak. The journey ahead must seem rough and steep. One step at a time, yes, you'll learn as you go. Healing takes time, this ain't no reality show. It's a long call. Oh, it's a long call. And it takes the time it takes.
Yes, it takes the time it takes.